Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you. She's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
It's almost 52 years so far. The world has become a worse and worse place. Every year we have polluted more water than the year before. Every year there's been less clean air than there was the year before that. Every year there are fewer species on the planet than the year before that. We're driving 200 species a day to extinction. We're about to see that turn around. The living planet is about to make a comeback. And that's really, really good news.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nature Bats Last Radio Show. I'm Pauline Schneider in New York, and this is the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. This is a pre-recorded show, so I won't be able to take any calls. But please feel free to comment on the Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM Facebook group page. Our theme song is provided as a gift by Afrozen. You can find more of his work on SoundCloud. Our SOS background sound is provided by 17-year-old Rian Ferrigan. I'm filling in today for Guy and Mike. Tonight I'll be speaking with Carolyn Baker, who took over for Michael Rupert on the Lifeboat Hour nearly a year ago. And she'll tell us about her new workshop and her new book about to be released. I know everyone wants to know how Guy is. And if you know Guy, you've heard his I'm fine line. And really, he seems fine. But we're still keeping a close watch on him, since he's on rat poison, also known as Coumadin. Which is why we want to send an assistant with him on his European speaking tour. We've raised enough to purchase her round-trip ticket, and we now need 12 more connecting tickets. We have to buy 3 flights and a bunch of train tickets within the countries he'll be visiting, and lots of trains, a couple of buses, and food, and, you know, all the extra stuff. So we've set up a fundraiser called Send a Friend. If you go to fundly.com and search for Send a Friend, it'll pop right up. The whole European tour is crowdfunded, and each event has been arranged locally. So we don't really know the particulars of each of the hosts. The best thing to do if you want to find out about this is to go to guymcpherson.net. We've created an entirely different website just for his tours. And the German team has been amazing. They've designed a beautiful website. It's fantastic, and it's very easy to use. And if you're speaking, you know, if you only speak German, they even have a German version. So I recommend go there. Check the events page, and there are several Eventbrite events so that you can go and register for all the different events. He's going to be in several different countries, several different cities, and I'm going to go through those in a little bit. So let's see. So he leaves here the 8th, which is coming up, and he'll be gone through the 29th. He starts in Edinburgh, Glasgow, Amsterdam, Utrecht, Munster, Hamburg, Berlin, Vienna, Salzburg, Munich, Constance, Zurich, Geneva, London, Bristol and Wales, and Reykjavik. And then he returns to London for his departure. So He's going to be at a lot of amazing places. He's going to meet a lot of different people. And we really need someone to be with him to make sure that he's hydrated, that he's rested, and that he's taking his medication, and that, you know, he doesn't get unduly stressed, you know, because of his pulmonary embolism that he got on his trip to California. We really want to keep a good close on our friend Guy. So we are looking for donations to help send Ariadne to give him all the help that he needs. She is an amazing and dedicated person. She is a doctor. She is an educator, a health educator, and she's just fantastic. She's stepped up, and you know, it's going to be a pretty long, grueling trip. So it'll be nice to have her along to really give him the help that he needs. So we're really asking people to reach deep and to try to, you know, pull out the stops if you have already donated. Thank you so much. Every little amount really helps. Really, really helps. And your time is also money. So if you have any special skills that you would like to volunteer, please let us know. We are very happy to take volunteers. You know, anybody who knows about IT or anyone who has any kind of, you know, training in, you know, arranging events, we could use a lot of good advice right there. Videography, managing, coordinating guys' events. If you know how to do stuff like that, just contact us if you have a little time to spare. And we do it for free because we love him. And we know how important this message is. You know, you only go extinct once. So you might as well pull out the stops and go for it. You know, last month, we helped him launch his very popular now Edge of Extinction YouTube blog series. And you can get regular updates from him on his YouTube channel, the Nature Bats Last YouTube channel. So he's even shared about his experience in the ER there, when he had his pulmonary embolism. It's easy for me to say. So I invite you to check out his YouTube channel, Nature Bats Last. It's full of great videos. There's always something new coming up there. We have playlists from previous videos that are on other channels. We've really created a really nice, easily accessible place for getting all the latest Guy vids. I just want to thank Progressive Radio Network for really trying hard to get things going. I know it's been really rough, and you guys have had a pretty insurmountable, seemingly insurmountable hurdles over and over again. And so you're a rare gem and source of truth, and you're slowly getting your mojo back, and kudos. Thank you. Thank you for hanging in there. You know, it's still a place where we can speak freely, even if the NSA is listening, and we know they are. And there's no censorship, you know, at PRN, except that which comes from the occasional and often annoying hacking by the powers that be. And that's how we know, though, that the folks at PRN and their hosts and all their various radio shows are doing good work. You know, they don't want people to hear the truth. The PTB does not want you to know what's really happening. And instead of just coming out and saying, oh, you know, you guys can't be lying and things. No, they can't do that because they're not. And they're telling the truth. So they have to resort to these scurrilous methods. And that's how the PTB rolls. But we won't let that stop us, will we? I'm Pauline Schneider. And this is Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Coming up Wednesday, April Fools, on Facebook, if you have a Facebook account, please join Guy and a whole bunch of us. We are going to have a live chat with Guy. The event is called the April Fool's Gratitude with Guy McPherson. It will be Wednesday at 8 p.m. through 9 p.m. I'm not exactly sure what time zone that is, We'll have to figure that one out. We'll let you know. But if you go to your Facebook and go to events and search for April Fool's Gratitude with Guy McPherson, I'm sure you'll find it. So we're going to have a great conversation. We're going to ask him anything. It'll be the Reddit version of Ask Him Anything. And it'll be a lot of fun. What we want to do is create a private chat with everyone who signs up for it. And then have a great and fun and lively text chat. Not a phone and not a Skype, but a very fun text chat. And these are popping up all over the country, and it'll be an opportunity for people who have been following Guy and have questions and want to participate to really get to the meat of things. So that's April 1st, April Fools, the April Fools Gratitude with Guy McPherson Facebook event. And maybe you're having questions about how I'm doing. I know I surprised a lot of people. I ended up in the emergency room last week. I surprised myself. It turns out that I have textbook perfect heart and cholesterol levels and all that other good stuff. So there is nothing wrong with me as far as that goes. They didn't check my brain, so, you know, that remains to be determined. But what I do have is Lyme disease, and it's pretty significant, and I've been battling it since September, and it's taken quite its toll both on my body and on my checkbook. I've had Lyme 6 times, and it's a kick in the butt on many ways. It sucks the time out of your life. It takes the life out of you. And it's really expensive because insurance companies don't recognize it as a condition, as a chronic condition. They assume, based on, you know, some people's determinations, that it can be cured with a 21-day round of doxycycline. Well, that is not always the case. That's a helpful preventative, but it doesn't necessarily do the work. So anyway, I've been battling since September with massive doses of several varieties of antibiotics every day, and it's exhausting. And I had this really interesting epiphany, and I just want to share it briefly. I realized that what Lyme does is it creates inflammation in the body, and inflammation in places where you have a weakness. And then your body, your immune system, goes into attack mode and, you know, defense and prevent mode. So the inflammation is actually your body trying to protect yourself. Well, the Lyme bugs love that, and they descend upon the inflammation that your own body has created, and they just start gobbling all that stuff up. And I was thinking, you know, that's a false flag in my body. That's a false flag in my body that is creating my body's reaction, an overreaction to something that is not even there. And I wonder if other people might have had that same experience in that, or that realization that our bodies are creating false flags and having these overreactive responses to these foreign elements. And, you know, what my basic thing is I want to change that, and I want to walk away from the paradigm of scarcity and embrace the paradigm of abundance. Living in a paradigm of scarcity causes fear, and it causes hate, and it causes war. And so my little microcosm of my own body and my own being is kind of a metaphor for what's going on in the world. And I just thought that was a kind of a strange metaphor, that maybe if, you know, we looked at our own bodies as these microcosms, we are something like over 90% foreign DNA. So we have all these little creatures that live on us and that rely on us, And we rely on them. And if we're constantly wiping them out with antibiotics and terrible food and terrible living habits, how are we supposed to, you know, thrive? And how are we supposed to be whole? And I think these are really interesting ideas. I think Gary Null talks a lot about that sort of thing. So I'm just, you know, it's interesting to think about it and talk about it, but it's really, when you really get it, it's pretty mind-blowing. So there's some updates on my Going Dark documentary. At first, you can watch Going Dark documentary on my YouTube channel, Pauline Project Love. And for those who like to criticize the monetization of my work, I have earned a whopping 66 cents from YouTube on it. Yay! So I'm going to be rich pretty soon. I just feel it. I know, believe it. But I would actually love to actually get some help. If people want to support the documentaries that I do, the work that I do, the live streaming that I do, you know, I'm constantly helping Guy and get these videos onto his YouTube channel. I would love help as well. And I would appreciate if anyone wants to donate to my Fundly account, which is the Going Dark documentary. You can Google it on the Fundly search, little search box. Just type in Google Going Dark documentary. Any amount is great. I've spent my personal savings to make that film. I spent a year traveling, and I had to buy equipment, and really, it was an incredible experience, which I benefited from it emotionally and intellectually, and I hope other people have as well. Going Dark will also be screened at the Bare Bones Film Festival in Muskogee, Oklahoma, from April 10th to the 19th. And then closer to home, Going Dark will be screened as part of a student repertoire at the Jacob Burns Film Center in Pleasantville, New York, on April 17th, because I took the documentary course that Jacob Burns offers, along with several other people. And several of us were able to complete our projects thanks to the amazing instructors that we had there. Yolanda Prevedal was my instructor, and thank you, Yolanda. You are amazing. You just rock. So check my goingdark.org website for dates and times. Those are to be announced. Now I'd like to welcome Carolyn Baker to the show. Hi, Carolyn. How are you doing?
Hey, Pauline. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thanks a lot for coming. We've had some interesting problems with the technology and you know, getting things on the air, but we're finally here, and we're going to do it, and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Well, listen, I wanted to know, you've got this amazing new workshop coming out. You've got a new book. You have a webinar. What's going on? You're doing so much. You're incredibly busy. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. You know, I've been doing this work for the last, really 7 or 8 years consistently. And it just seems to be snowballing right now as things get worse, as people become more aware of the collapse of industrial civilization and catastrophic climate change. People are looking for emotional and spiritual tools for preparing for and navigating this scenario. So there's just a lot of interest right now, and I'm noticing the interest in just the facts, you know, like what's actually happening. That's kind of waning, and people are looking more, you know, because a lot of people already know, they have all the information. They're looking now for these tools. And so I'm really pleased that, as you said, a new workshop is coming out in June. A new book has just come out, and I've got the radio show on Progressive Radio Network, and a lot of irons in the fire, for which I'm very grateful.
That's great. I think you're right. I mean, people definitely need this. I mean, people are always coming and asking us, you know, where they can go and get some help and advice with this, mm-hmm. you know, the big idea of extinction. But can you tell us a little bit more? I mean, I definitely want to get the dates and the information of this workshop in
sure.
June.
Yeah.
And Can you give us a little, give us that now, and then we'll ask for it again later.
Absolutely. First, let me just preface this by saying all information is on my website at carolynbaker.net and also on a Facebook page that I have. The Gifts of Grief is the name of the Facebook page, and that's also the title of the workshop, The Gifts of Grief, Grief as Sacred Work. And it's going to happen in Providence, Rhode Island, on the Alton Jones campus of the University of Rhode Island. And that is a wooded area that's very isolated. It's in a beautiful spot in nature. We're going to start on Friday evening and finish at Sunday at noontime. We've got wonderful lodging, excellent organic food, and just a wonderful safe space for people to do this work. And basically, you know, what it is looking at our grief and looking at some of the messages that our culture has given us about why we shouldn't grieve and moving through those and then grieving together in a, this is a particularly traditional, actually ancient African ritual of grief that we're going to be doing together. And we're going to connect very deeply before we do it so that everyone feels safe and supported. And what I've experienced in doing these workshops is that at the end, well, you know, we come through it just feeling like 1,000 pounds have been lifted off of us. We're much lighter and we just move into joy and celebration. So I'm very, very excited about this weekend that we're doing.
Oh, it sounds amazing. It sounds amazing that this is an ancient grief ritual. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's it's from the Dagara tribe of West Africa, and a couple of decades ago, the elders of that tribe told two people, Maladoma Somme and Sobhanfu Somme, to come to the United States and start teaching the people in the West about grieving and about a lot of the wisdom from their tribe. And so particularly now, Sobhanfu Somme, a wonderful, wise young woman. I say young. She's in her late 30s, early 40s.
Is
young. Has been doing these workshops all over the world. And I've had the privilege of doing several of those workshops with her and with Maladoma. And, you know, it comes from a tribe that really believes that we need to grieve on a regular basis. And I kind of playfully say these people have a funeral once a week, even if nobody dies. And what I mean by that is that they really understand that if we don't grieve regularly, our grief becomes toxic, and then it affects the entire community. And so this is a way of people deeply connecting with each other and with the earth and, you know, removing that toxicity and removing these burdens of grief and then coming together where they can really connect cleanly and clearly with each other.
That's very interesting. This toxicity is not even just a spiritual or, you know, imaginary toxicity. It's actually been proven scientifically. We hold these toxins in our bodies and we can cry them out in our tears.
Absolutely. That is absolutely true. We have a lot of scientific validation of that.
So isn't it fascinating that ancient cultures had developed ways of dealing with grief, and they didn't have the science that we have today? But today, the way we commonly deal with grief is by using drugs or alcohol or cookies, food, sex, you know, anything but to feel our feelings.
And we don't even know that we're dealing with grief in that way because we've got so much programming in this culture that says, don't grieve. You know, it's like it's weak, it's for sissies, you know, you should be taking action, you should be getting busy instead of grieving. You know, grief is a private thing, and the least you can do is go off and have a good cry where nobody sees you because we don't want to see your tears and we don't want to deal with your feelings, you know, and so just get over it, you know. And we have bereavement leave, which is kind of a joke in a lot of workplaces where maybe you have 4 or 5 days to grieve the loss of a loved one, and then, hey, back to work, better get on with it like it never happened, you know. Right. And but there are many, many, many reasons for grieving. It isn't just the loss of a loved one. I mean, let me count the ways. And of course, those of us who are aware of our planetary predicament, we're in deep sorrow about what's happening to the planet. And so that's going to be, I'm sure, a large part of the focus of our grief weekend.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. There are more than just a couple reasons for grieving.
Yeah.
Aside from, you know, the death of someone that you love or a pet, you know, or or a friend. And I find that, you know, people when they've moved from homes or had to sell a beloved home or lost a job, it's very painful.
Absolutely.
And we're not, like you said, we're not allowed to feel that pain. I mean, one of the most popular songs in the last couple decades was "Don't Worry, Be Happy."
Oh yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, you always, you know, as soon as people start feeling sad, you know, somebody comes up and says, "Oh, here, let me hug you so I can take that pain away from you." But really, what they're saying is, "I can't handle your pain. I don't know what to do with it."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you need to stop being sad now because I'm uncomfortable with your sorrow.
And so it's so refreshing when people can come into an environment where they are honored for grieving, you know, and it's a completely different message. You know, it's like, yeah, this is a time for grieving. Let it be here. Let it happen. And good work. Good on you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We, you know, as you know, Guy and I have been developing a grief based workshop as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you've blazed the trail on that one, honestly, really. So we're following your footsteps there. But what we found when we did, you know, we got some feedback from the participants that they were just amazed at how tremendously helpful it was to be able to share that and to be heard. Because one of the things that people don't get in our culture is they don't get really heard.
Right.
And validated. That's a skill that we don't usually, you know, nourish or, you know, learn. You have to learn it. You have to be taught it to listen.
Well, I don't know about the feedback that you get, but, you know, when I do these workshops, and again, I might be blazing a trail in one hand. I owe it to Maladoma and Sobhantu for what they're doing and what they brought to us from from West Africa. But, you know, the feedback that I consistently get is, oh my God, I just feel so much more alive since I've done this work. Or, you know, I can't believe how much joy I have today. You know, it's like, I can't believe that after all that grieving I did yesterday, I just feel so light and joyful. You know, so it really is powerful.
Oh, wow. That's a really good to hear. I think that it makes sense. You've had a chance to share your sorrows, your grief, your agony, you've had a chance to cry, to mm-hmm. detox, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge thing to be to detoxify. And how else could you feel after that but joyful?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, what happens when people do bury it? I mean, have you had first, I mean, you're a psychologist, correct?
Well, I'm a former psychotherapist.
So, you know, in your years of practice, I'm sure you've seen people come to you with all this pent-up grief and pain, mm-hmm. and, you know, they not really knowing. They may not have even known that they had that.
Well, not only that, but, you know, my friend Frances Weller, who wrote what I consider the definitive book on grief, a little book called Entering the Healing Ground, Grief, Ritual, and the Soul of the World, which is required reading for our workshop. You know, he often says that depression is many times unmetabolized grief. So it's because of the not grieving that people become depressed in many cases, you know, and people often say to me, well, gee, what if I get stuck in my grief and I never stop grieving? And what I say is, number one, your body will naturally stop the process because that's what the body does. And number two, what's more dangerous is if you don't grieve, because then you get stuck in depression.
Oh, that's That's interesting. It's so, it seems actually like the opposite, you know, that if you start grieving a lot, you're going to be stuck in this depressive state. We were actually, you know, concerned about that because we didn't, you know, we were sending people home with work, with grief work to do. Mm-hmm. And we actually warned them, you know, don't go too deep mm-hmm. because we don't want you to get to a place where, you know, you can't get out of. Mm-hmm. And do you have experience with something like that where people might go too deep and they might actually need help?
Well, you know, that's possible. We like to interview our folks that are coming to the workshop, and I don't mean like in person, but we ask them specific questions like, do you have any medical conditions that we need to know about? Do you have any psychological conditions you'd like to tell us about? And we set it up so that the container is really tight, the boundaries are really tight, and people have tremendous support. I'm going to be there facilitating. We've got another person coming to this workshop who's a therapist, and we're going to have lots of safety nets for this sort of thing and plenty of support and safety. I mean, we're really, really into creating a safe space, and we do that in many different ways. And so, you know, in my experience with doing these workshops, we've not had any situations where people got stuck in their grief or they had to be hospitalized or anything like that. You know, they may have needed to back off and take some space and get lots more support, you know, and that's fine. But nobody's gone over the edge, I can tell you that.
What are you are you noticing any kind of gender preference? I mean, I know in our culture, men are really, you know, big boys don't cry, pretty much. So, you know, do you see that in what you're experiencing right now? Are you finding
Yeah. I see that really right now we have more men registered than women.
Wow.
Because women in this culture do have permission to cry.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not for long, and maybe, you know, like, you know, get a stiff upper lip and get a grip. But men just have no permission, you know. You just, big boys don't cry, you know. Come on, man up, don't puss out, you know, that sort of thing. And so there are so many men, you know, that I work with and that I know who are just aching for a place like this where they can let it out. And so, you know, I'm pleased to say, I don't know how it's all going to turn out in the end, but right now we have actually more men registered than women, but we have a good number of women too. I think it's going to end up being pretty equal.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, if one of the interesting things I found is, you know, when we did our workshop, that everyone cried, men and women.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. In my past, it's funny because men were so, they seemed very nervous about crying in front of women.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I think if you create a safe space, they won't have that concern that they're going to be shamed for their tears or thought less.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's really, it's just really critical for men. I mean, as hard as it's been for women,
mm-hmm.
the male is really, it's like, he's like the hidden victim in our culture in a strange way.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Just like we don't, you know, we hear a lot about like sexual abuse in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Among women, yeah. We don't hear about sexual abuse in the military among men. And in the same way, we don't hear about sexual abuse just out in civilian society much with males, you know. And the statistics now are something like 1 out of 3 women and 1 out of 5 boys. And we don't hear much about that because men are just taught, you don't talk about this, you know. People are going to think you're gay. People are going to think you wanted it, you know. And so men really are in so many ways the silent victims. And I'm so happy to see groups, you know, men's groups around the country. And they're all different kinds of men's groups, but I know of many men's groups where they do cry and they do grieve and they do go out in nature and connect with nature, and they really develop their hearts and their sensitivity, and I celebrate that.
Oh, that's wonderful. I know. They seem to be, you know, men who have, you know, awakened to their emotional reality, to their... which is connected to their physical being, they definitely seem to be far more engaging. You know, you can talk to them and they will listen. I think all around, male or female, if you're able to connect to your emotions, I think you'll be a much happier, healthier person and more likely to listen to other people's pain and be able to engage.
Absolutely.
One of the things that you know, we learned was to be a heart with ears. That's so powerful.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Because you know, people in this culture are dying, literally dying, to be listened to, mm-hmm. to be heard. And the most powerful and loving gift that we can give anybody is to listen to them and really hear them.
Right. Yes. And it's an interesting skill that you know I've learned from doing several different kinds of workshops throughout the years, but that active listening is really powerful. Do you have a part of your workshop where you learn active listening?
Yeah, we divide people up into small groups, not throughout the whole thing, but there are several occasions where we divide people up into small groups, you know, like four or five people, and they really talk about why they're there, and they ask each other questions, and they really listen to each other, and I'm just amazed every time we do a workshop like this, how those small groups bond, how they really hang on to each other and hang with each other, because they're really being heard and listened to and valued.
Mm-hmm. That it's almost like alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
You put these people together and it's like alchemy. They just create this little beautiful universe where they do feel safe.
Yes.
And they open up to each other. It's beautiful. I mean, it's really, it's fun too.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
You know, it's pretty remarkable. So tell us about your book, this wonderful book that you've come out with.
Well, yeah, new book. It's called Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, Cultivating the Relationships We Need to Thrive. Uh-huh. And, you know, in 2013, I wrote Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truths for Turbulent Times, which is basically 17 essays and then 52 weekly reflections, followed by 313 reflections in an e-book. And so that was a very successful book. People just loved the inspiration in it. And then I thought, you know, I got to write something about relationships, but I really want people to understand that this isn't about, you know, advice for the lovelorn. Mm-hmm. You know, this is about relationships with everything. I was very struck by a quote I read a couple of years ago by a radical priest, whom I'm a big fan of, Richard Rohr in Albuquerque, who just simply says, all of creation is relationship. And then, you know, our beloved guy who says in one of his books, at this late juncture in the age of industry, at the dawn of our day on earth, we still have love. Love for each other, love for our children and grandchildren, love for nature. One could argue it is all we have left. Mm-hmm. So what I do in this book is I take 16 different kinds of relationships, because, you know, we have thousands of relationships in our lives. I took 16 of them and just looked at them in the light of our predicament, you know, on this planet. So one of the first things I dealt with in the very first chapter, because I'm a life coach and I'm sure that like you and Guy, you're encountering people all the time who are in a partner relationship with somebody who doesn't know what they know and doesn't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the first chapter is entitled Loving, Living, and Preparing with a Reluctant Partner. You know, and so I go into great depth about what do you do when you're with a partner or you're with another family member who doesn't want to hear about catastrophic climate change or collapse of industrial civilization. How do you deal with that? And so the first chapter is all about that. And then people are always asking me about, you know, well, how do I raise my children in the light of possibly they have absolutely no future? How do I deal with that? And so chapter two is about this. And then I have in the appendix a wonderful three article series by a woman named Amanda Whitman from Vermont on raising kids for a resilient future. And then I have and then this chapter is about family and community, and really what is community and how do we do it in these turbulent times? You know, bearing in mind that when we try to come together in community, we're all broken and wounded, and it's going to be rough. We got to really do some serious work if we're going to live and be in community. So chapter three talks about that. Do you want me to go on?
Yes, please. Absolutely.
Okay. I also have a chapter in there about work and creativity. I talk a lot about the sacred economy and meaningful work. And then the next chapter is about our relationship with resources, both natural resources and financial resources. I talk about moving from entitlement to enoughness. And I propose that four ways we can do that are through what I call the four G's, which is practicing gratitude, working with our grief, establishing guardianship of some aspect of nature, like, you know, we want to do work for the trees or we want to do work for animals. And then, of course, giving back. Those are the four G's. I have a chapter on loving our bodies as the world falls apart. How do we get out of the prison of our intellect and into our bodies? There's a chapter on mindful eating as a spiritual practice. One chapter is about loving the time of your life, relating to whatever age you are, because in whatever age you are, the real job is the extraction of deep wisdom. And learning how to live the deeper story that we came here to live. Chapter 9 is about animals. It's called What an Animal You Are. And it focuses on our relationships with not only the animals out there, but the animal that each of us is, and how our intimate connections with animals can help us be more human. Chapter 10, I talk about darkness and shadow. I give some tools for dealing with shadow. And by the way, my next book is going to focus on the shadow. It's called Dark Gold. And I won't get into all of that right now because that's for another time. I'll just continue talking about love in the age of ecological apocalypse for a minute. Chapter 11 is called Ensconced in Beauty. Ensconced in Eros, Bathed in Beauty. And I talk about the need to, especially in this time of pollution, deforestation, ocean acidification, and the extinction of some 200 species a day, how crucial it is that we bathe in beauty and earth eroticism, which takes us out of our heads and more tenderly into our hearts. I have a whole chapter on the powers of the universe, on which I summarize a DVD lecture presented by physicist Brian Swim on what the universe actually does and what our role as conscious, self-aware beings is in that process. You know, and this is just indigenous wisdom that indigenous people have understood for thousands of years. But Brian frames it in scientific terms that is a beautiful marriage of science and spirituality. And then in chapter 13, I talk about near-term extinction and waking up to death. There's a wonderful YouTube video that I quote by a guy named Ryan Cooper entitled Why Climate Change is Not an Environmental Issue. He argues that, yes, it's an environmental issue, but it's also an existential issue, which has to do with meaning and purpose. And chapter 14, I talk about leaving empire. You know, Guy has written a book on walking away from empire. And the name of this chapter is Empire, I Wish I Could Quit You. And so we get into some ways to do that. Chapter 15 is a big focus on grief. A whole chapter is on grief and love in a culture of congestive heart failure. Congestive heart failure is one of the number one killers of our culture. And we just talked about, when we were talking about grief, we understand now why that is. And the final chapter in Love in the Age deals with our relationship with future generations. Certainly future generations, we don't know if they have a future. But I argue that two of the most important things we can be doing for young people is telling them stories. Stories from indigenous cultures and stories that teach them the ways that past generations have lived in harmony with the earth. And we can also help them find within themselves the gifts they came here to give. This isn't, I say, about taking aptitude tests, but rather taking the attitude of the indigenous elder and helping every young person find their gifts. So that's kind of a summary of Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse.
That's phenomenal. And it's so thorough because you really, you know, span the gamut of everything that, you know, you could possibly have to deal with, you know, especially like the sacred economy part and with your kids or your pets. I mean, I had a friend call me the other day and expressed his deep concern that he might have to put his pets to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, how do you do that? How, you know, and that's anticipatory grief.
Yeah.
At another whole other existential level of what you have to deal with, what's coming around the corner. And then, you know, young mothers with young, very small children, absolutely distraught at what could be coming. You know, very confused about how, you know, how to live now. And, of course, I always just tell them, just love them, play with them, have
exactly.
fun. You know,
exactly.
This is all we have. You know, life is always, you know, sort of unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. For example, the German Wings flight.
Yes.
I mean, talk about how one person's depression can affect so many people.
Oh, yes. My goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
And that just makes it so much more important to be honest with ourselves.
Yes.
You know, are you feeling depressed? Are you sad?
Yeah.
Is something really gnawing away at you?
Yeah, exactly. And we have very few places in this culture where we can share that. You know, yeah, you can go into therapy, but, you know, some people have a lot of stigma about that. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a supportive community around us, you know, what Maladoma and Subantu call a village, you know, to really hold us. And then that's what we create in the grief workshop, is a village, you know. And I think that's what we need to be creating everywhere, are villages where we can be heard and supported.
Oh, I really like that. It sort of goes back to it takes a village.
Yeah.
I know the population is so large now. It's so hard to connect with people. I think that many of my close, dear connections I've actually made, oddly enough, through the internet.
Yeah.
And you've been able to use that tool. While we still have it.
Right, right.
The internet is really an amazing tool to connect us and to create that village and to find our tribe. Some of these titles in your chapters that you were talking about sort of harken back to the webinars that you have done in the past,
mm-hmm.
especially the one with beauty.
Yeah, well, I actually did one last year, almost 2 years ago now, on befriending the dark emotions, and I talked about five specific emotions that come up in the face of what we're dealing with, grief, anger, despair, and can't remember the fourth one, but they all lead to, if we allow them to, they lead to joy. And then this last webinar that I did really did focus on this recent book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse. And in May, Francis Weller and I are going to be doing a two-part webinar on grief, kind of in preparation for the workshop. He's not going to be at the workshop, but he does a lot of grief weekends. And so we're going to talk about grief and joy. And I'm not sure what the title's going to be, but we know that the words grief and joy are going to be in the title because they absolutely travel together.
That's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So man. Stay tuned for that one. We'll be letting everybody know.
That's excellent. And you have a YouTube channel.
I do, thanks to you. You've been very helpful with me on that. I do have a YouTube channel. We made a little video for the Grief Weekend, which you can see. It's right at the top of my website, carolynbaker.net, and also on Facebook. There's a wonderful little page called The Gifts of Grief, which is attached to my Facebook page, and that's all about the grief weekend that we're going to have. I encourage people to go there and like it and make comments and interact with it in anticipation for this big weekend.
That sounds great. And this is
June 12th through 14th. June 12th through 14th.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
I have a question.
I'm sure
a lot of people ask you this. Why do you charge for your work and your books?
Because we still have a money system.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and as long as we have a money system, I plan to do that. You see, I have to eat.
Oh.
And I have bills to pay.
What?
And it costs me to do this work.
Oh,
So I try to incorporate the gift economy in certain places in my work. We've given away a couple of scholarships for our workshop, and I do what I can around that. I have drastically reduced the prices of my life coaching, but I do not intend to give my work away anytime soon. I think it's valuable. And I want other people to value it just as I want to value other people's work who are doing really good work in the world.
That's beautifully said. Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You think about when you write a lawyer an email, the lawyer charges you $70 for that email.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Is this part of the sacred economy?
Is which part of it?
The gift economy,
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, it's kind of a brainchild of Charles Eisenstein, and his book, The Sacred Economy, I strongly urge people to read that and just get some ideas of what life could be like in a different economic system. I suspect, I don't know how long it's going to take, but I suspect at some point the money system is going to completely go away, and we're going to have to find new ways to exchange, to give, to trade things, to interact with each other. And so this is really good preparation for that. But I'm not living there yet. And so as long as we have a money system, I have to pay my bills and I have to buy food and I have to pay money to do the work I do.
Right.
Yeah. And I will not be doing the sacred economy full bore.
Yeah. That's
and I feel fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, it's interesting. You know, we've had an experience with applying the gift economy. Dan Kinch asked me last week about the gift economy, and I said there are two versions of the gift economy. There's the kind where I just give you everything and I get nothing back. And then there's the other kind where we have a nice even exchange where, you share, you barter, whatever.
I want to also mention that there are places in my life where I give completely. I have a very deep connection with a homeless man and his dog. And I regularly give them food. I regularly give them money. I give them much of my time. I make contributions to animal organizations as much as possible and people organizations. So there are places in my life where I just flat out give. It's a practice for me. It's a spiritual practice. So I just want to state that because that's important to me to say that.
Thank you. Thank you, Carolyn. Well, I think, you know, there's a great amount of grief right now with the state of the economy. People are either underemployed or unemployed or employed in jobs that they're miserable in.
And
I think that that might also be a source of actual sorrow. You know, the drone operators are actually suicidal right now.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. Yes, they are.
They're not happy.
No. I mean, how could they be? And there is great grief with you're doing a job just to survive and pay the bills, but you're not giving your gifts.
Right.
And so it's very important, if at all possible, that while you're doing this job that you must have in order to eat, but it's not a place to give your gifts. It's very important that you find a place where you can. So sometimes I tell people, you know, they're doing a job that they really don't like, but it pays the bills. Okay, so on the weekend, go spend a couple hours with some homeless people, or do something, maybe some teaching or reading to people in a prison, or go be a hospice volunteer, or work with disadvantaged kids of some sort. You know, give your gifts and do what you got to do.
Oh yeah, it feels so good. It feels good to do those things, to give of yourself. It's funny because when I used to, you know, do something nice for someone, I'd feel really good about it. And I'd tell my mom, oh, it made me feel really good. And she would shut me down. She goes, pride goeth before the fall.
Yeah.
And that always haunted me. So throughout my life, because of my mother, I always tried to not feel good about doing good things, that it was just a duty. I just had to do the good thing. But now that I'm an adult now and I see the world from a different perspective, I realize that feeling good is really good. It's a nice thing, and that we should try to feel good. It's important.
Absolutely. I mean, it is an incredible gift to ourselves when we give to other people. It's just an amazing gift to ourselves, and we should not shut that down at all.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Carolyn, thank you so much for coming here today. And
thanks for having me and letting me say all these things.
It was wonderful. Do you have any parting words you'd like to say, anything you'd like to share?
Yeah, I would like to share a poem that is one of my favorite. It's a short one, and this is by Jean Hirschfeld. You know, we're in a time now where we just don't know. We really don't know. There's so much that we're not certain about. And so I leave you with these words. The title of her poem is Against Certainty. And she says, there is something out in the dark that wants to correct us. Each time I think this, it answers that. Answers hard in the heart grammar's strictness. If I then say that, it too is taken away. Between certainty and the real, an ancient enmity. When the cat waits in the path hedge, no cell of her body is not waiting. This is how she is able so completely to disappear. I would like to enter the silent portion as she does, to live amid the great vanishing as a cat must live. One shadow, fully at ease, inside another.
That was beautiful, Carolyn. Thank you so much. I got chills hearing that.
You're welcome.
Very, very cool and very creepy, too.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Likewise.
Great. Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's the show for tonight. Please make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, on the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bat Blast on PRN.fm. Feel free to post questions you'd like us to answer on the show. And please continue to follow Guy's blog, GuyMcPherson.com. www.thewordofgod.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. Join us next week with Mike Sliva. Guy will be in Europe. Thanks again to all the excellent contributions, Afrizen, and until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, nature bats last.